Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, this is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
You know, I always have to kind of roll my eyes when somebody complains, hey, you cut me off. Hey, how come I didn't get a talk for 15 more minutes? Well, because there's like five other people in line behind you that also want to get an opportunity to talk. And it's the same reason why I got to cut myself off. I got to cut John Jackson off when he was with us on the show yesterday. Man, you know, we had John Jackson with us in studio for 2 hours, and we still didn't cover everything that we wanted to talk about because we put a priority on taking your phone calls and giving you the chance to talk and hear what you want to talk about. And so anyway, the reason I say that is because I walked into the studio here about 30 seconds ago or so, and I looked at the article that was in front of me, and I think it was Dennison Bozeman who had sent this on yesterday. But basically, it was this article that one of our listeners had sent to us here. I think it's from realclearpolitics.com. And it goes back to March 24th of 2021, $18.2 million congressional slush fund for Me Too claims. Since 1997, the Office of Congressional Workplace Rights has paid out $18.2 million to settle 291 cases of workplace disputes for Congress, the Capitol Police, the architect of the Capitol, and the Library of Congress. And basically what they're saying here, you might remember this story from a few years ago, is that a lot of these members of Congress had these sexual harassment complaints against them, and they used your money, taxpayer money, to pay out these secret settlements. So it was either Dennison Bozeman or Bruce and Ennis who had sent that to us yesterday. And of course, the reason why they sent it to us is because of the fact that look at what they're trying to prosecute Donald Trump over. Over a settlement. Basically, there was a claim that was made, and like a lot of politicians, he wanted to keep it quiet. So, hey, he paid out a settlement. But he used his money. Not your money, not the taxpayers' money. So that was the great point that a few of our listeners I know were making yesterday in a number of different ways. But the point that I wanted to make yesterday, and I was like after the show, I remember I was like, we totally forgot to talk about this because we just, you know, we had so many callers calling in, especially in our statewide hour from 9 to 10. But John Jackson and I had talked about this during the break. And because that article that one of our listeners sent us about the congressional slush fund, silence accusers, it reminded me, you know what? There's a Montana angle to this story as well. You remember former Democrat Governor Steve Bullock. Remember the guy who lost the Senate race by about 10 points statewide? He lost Yellowstone County by about 16 points. He had a little problem with taxpayer-funded little secret settlements going on in state government as well, didn't he? In fact, it was like over $1 million in secret settlements that went out under former Democrat Governor Steve Bullock, the same guy who kicked his female lieutenant governor to the curb. Remember that whole deal? So, should Steve Bullock be prosecuted? Should some local prosecutor file charges against him? Why not?
Here's your Montana news. Two women have been charged in the 2019 death of 6-year-old Mildred Oldcrow. Rosine Winken Oldcrow and Veronica Tears of Dust face a count each of felony deliberate homicide and felony tampering with evidence. According to court documents, Millie Oldcrow was last seen in March 2019 and reported missing in November 2019. Non-custodial family members requested a hearing in December 2020 with the Crow Tribal Court, which the two women did not attend nor produce the child. They were arrested later that month in Billings. The child's body was found in a camper in Gary Owen early in 2021. The couple were tried in tribal court in April 2021 for child endangerment and custodial interference and sentenced to 18 months in the BIA Detention Center in Hardin. This new arrest for murder is from Bighorn County warrants. KTVQ reported that Lincoln Oldcrow and Dust...
263. That's 406-201-6263. 406-201-6263.
Hey, you probably heard Evelyn Pyburn mention this from the Big Sky Business Journal on Monday's Montana Talks, but a huge opportunity for a rare earth mine right here in Montana. Look, here's the deal. When it comes to these electric vehicles, if you want these electric vehicles or any of this Green New Deal technology, you're going to need a lot of rare earth minerals. Well,
the answer, Juro's licensed professionals can help. Call them today. Remember, it's your health, your independence, your life.
Serving the great state of Montana. From the peaks of the Beartooth to the banks of the Clark Fork River. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
So yesterday in this 6 o'clock hour, we spent a good chunk of the 6 o'clock hour talking about Senate Bill 99 in the Montana legislature. Senate Bill 99 is basically the bill that would protect kids from these radical transgender surgeries that are being promoted right now, to protect them from life-altering surgeries and or medications that could cause severe health complications or lifelong harm. Irreversible surgeries, by the way, and some of these medications, which could in many ways be cause irreparable harm also. Right. So we talked a lot about that yesterday. And then I know, you know, some of you may not have been able to catch us in the 6 o'clock hour yesterday. But either way, for those of you who did, thought it was pretty interesting. So Senate Bill 99, you know, I played the clip later in the day yesterday where you had this this young man here in Montana who apparently for 6 years had identified as a transgender woman. Which, for those of you who aren't up on the latest terminology, a transgender woman is not a woman who identifies as a man. It's a man who identifies as a woman. And you'll oftentimes see the media report that they're women, even though they're actually men. So if you're not familiar with the woke terminology, a transgender woman is a man who identifies as a woman. So this young man apparently had identified that way, lived that way for like 6 years, and spoke at the legislature during this now state House Judiciary Committee hearing about that. And talked about how the euphoria kind of wore off after a while. And then he had to kind of confront this gender dysphoria after the euphoria of trying to live life as a woman wore off. And so think about it. What if that young man was, you know, much younger right now? And, you know, one of the parents was bullied by, you know, somebody wanting to make money off of the surgery. And the parents got bullied into saying, well, you better chop off the body parts of your son, or otherwise he might commit suicide. That's what they actually do. They bully people into this stuff because they say, hey, if you don't do this, your kids are going to kill themselves. Absolutely sickening. The way that the radical left is pushing this stuff right now, right? Anyway, so we talked a lot about Senate Bill 99 yesterday. I did get word from Jeff Lasloffy, and we'll play his legislative update again later this hour from the Montana Family Foundation. But SB 99 did pass the House Judiciary Committee. Of course, it already passed the full state Senate, and it will now go to the full floor of the state House. And there's a few lawmakers that they're encouraging you to contact, to give a phone call to today. We've got the full list on our Montana Talks website. After the alert was sent out by the Montana Family Foundation yesterday afternoon. But anyway, that, without going into the whole same dialogue that we went into yesterday, there one of the clips that's getting a lot of attention here at the national level this morning, I know they were playing it on Fox and Friends, is you know that radio host Charlemagne? He identifies as Charlemagne the God. But I don't know about you, but I don't really feel comfortable calling somebody the God who's not God. So I'm just going to call him Charlemagne. You know, if Charlemagne identified as Sue, wanted me to call him Sue, okay, whatever. You know, you can call me Betty, but Betty, if you call me, you can call me Al. Like, whatever name you want me to use for you, I'm cool with. But Charlemagne, I'm not going to call you the God. Sorry, not going along with that one. Anyway, so this radio host, Charlemagne, he's the guy. Remember when Joe Biden did this interview? And Joe Biden said, man, let me tell you what, if you don't vote for me, then you ain't black. That's when the white guy with the fake hair was telling this black radio host, if you don't vote for me, then you ain't black. Well, anyway, this Charlemagne guy on his, I think, New York City-based radio show, I think that's where he's based out of, if I'm not mistaken, he was talking about there was a Christian school, I think in Vermont, and in this Christian school, they had a girls' basketball team playing in a basketball tournament, just like we just had basketball tournaments across Montana. And one of the other teams had a male playing on the team. And so this school said, look, we've got a girls' basketball team here. We're not playing a team that has a guy on it. And so they did not play that game. And now the state of Vermont is just doing everything they can to punish this school for not going along with this nonsense. But anyway, even this guy, Charlemagne the you-know-what, had this to say on his radio show.
Since then, the Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion in Activities Committee, the Activity Standards Committee, and the VPA Executive Council made a decision that the team violated the policies, and they are now banned for all future activities and tournaments moving forward. So they can't play anything, not in a tournament, an activity, anything, because they violated that policy.
That's not fair. Because that sounds like common sense to me. Like, we've all seen Juwanna Man. We've seen Grandmama.
Well, not that.
I'm just saying, we've seen that. That person was probably out there averaging 30 and 20 against them women, man.
Remember that swimmer? He was a man, and then he transitioned to a woman. And when he was swimming as a man, he was like number 80.
Yes.
And then when he transitioned to a woman,
he was like number one or something. That's what I'm my point. Whoever they were playing against, I got to see the stats. If this person is averaging 55 points,
50,
40, 17 rebounds, 22 blocks, I'm not playing against him either. That's not fair.
Yeah, it's just common sense. It's garbage. Everybody knows it. But boy, if you don't play along, they want to punish you. They want to punish you for not playing along here in this LGBTQ dictatorship that is developing in America. They want to punish you and everybody else for not playing their game.
800-611-6638. Again, 800-611-6638. That's 800-611-6638.
Good morning, everybody. It's time for your Daybreak Egg Report. I'm Russell Nimitz, and thanks for being with us here on the Western Egg Network. Well, this morning, wolves are back in the headlines. That's because a working cow dog was killed by the apex predator early last week in Colorado. And with more on this story, here's our network's Rachel Gable.
Cisco, a 7-year-old border collie, proved his worth daily to Greg and Donna Sykes on the Swift Ranches in Jackson County. Sykes has a string of 8 border collies in various stages of training, but it's Cisco he counted on to help train the others. It was Cisco he could trust to send with Donna to gather bulls, and it was Cisco that worked alongside him every day. On March 13th, Sykes let the string of cow dogs outside briefly at 4 a.m. before calling them back to the mudroom where they sleep and eat. Cisco and a female dog didn't recall less than 30 minutes later. When the livestock guard dogs left the cows and showed up in his yard, Sykes said he knew he had a problem. He went outside to search for the dogs, but went in the opposite direction, never thinking they would be so close to the house. A few minutes later, he found Cisco just 30 yards from the house. Lady was laying beside him, unhurt, protecting his body. The two wolves that attacked and killed Cisco are collared, and Colorado Parks and Wildlife confirmed they also attacked a dog on a neighboring ranch only 4 miles away the following morning. That dog was euthanized due to his injuries. For the Fence Post Magazine and Western Ag Network, I'm Rachel Gable.
All right, thanks a lot, Rachel. Now, in case you're wondering, Colorado Parks and Wildlife does provide compensation for livestock guard and herding dogs based on the actual value of the dog at the time and place of the loss. And, of course, this latest kill comes as Colorado follows in the footsteps of Idaho, Montana, and Wyoming with its own plans of introducing wolves later this year. Stay with us. We'll have more ag news right after this.
It's spring planting time, and the Northern Pulse Growers Association reminds farmers to make pulses part of their 2023 cropping decision. Why plant pulses? Well, pulses provide financial and agronomic benefits. They're also a natural fertilizer by fixing atmospheric nitrogen into the soil for the following crop. Not to mention, they require less nitrogen fertilizers because they create their own. And pulses have a low carbon footprint, making them sustainable. Learn more about adding pulses into your cropping rotation by visiting northernpulse.com.
I'm Caroline Caldwell. I manage the new agrarian program from the Cuvira Coalition. Community supporting organizations are the lifeblood for Montana agriculture. I think finding that community of people helps propel you forward through the hard times, which there are quite a few of them in ranching. That's a part of why I think people really love it.
Montana Farmers Union is working to build community across agriculture and beyond. Learn more and join the community at MontanaFarmersUnion.com.
Well, just a few days ago, bank regulators shuttered and seized the deposits from two high-profile banks down in California, the Silicon Valley Bank and Signature Bank. And the bank collapses sent tremors through the financial system, surfacing memories for a lot of folks of the global crisis in 2008. However, Nate Franzen, president of Ag Banking at First Dakota National Bank, says that even if your bank is primarily focused on agriculture, that's not necessarily a red flag. That's because, he says, a lot of banks diversify their ag lending portfolio by type, size, and location of producers. And I'm sure this will be just one of the many topics up for discussion at the Montana Ag Bankers Conference headed for Bozeman tomorrow and Friday, which, by the way, I'll be helping to moderate one of this year's panels. That's a look at your Daybreak Ag Report for the Western Ag Network. I'm Russell Nemitz.
Montana is talking here. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, lots to talk about this morning here. Ron DeSantis. Ron DeSantis did an interview with Piers Morgan. That's another interview that's getting some good attention. What I like about Ron DeSantis is whenever he's asked about President Trump, whenever he's asked about this apparent rivalry between the two of them and whether Ron DeSantis will also run for president in 2024, I love the way that he just kind of shrugs it off, just kind of jokes about it. But anyway, they were saying that this was kind of like the opening bell for round one of a potential 2024 presidential primary as Ron DeSantis joined Piers Morgan for this interview. Let me see here. There's a couple of different – here we go. Yeah, one of the things Piers Morgan asked him about was okay – So President Trump has referred to you as Ron DeSanctimonious, trying to take a shot at you. What's your take on that, Governor DeSantis?
I don't know how to spell DeSanctimonious. I don't really know what it means, but I kind of like it's long. It's got a lot of vowels. I mean, so we'd go with that. That's fine. You know, you can call me whatever you want. I mean, just as long as you also call me a winner.
All right. So you can call me whatever you want as long as you call me a winner. That's how he identifies, and I think we all would identify Ron DeSantis as a winner, that's for sure. What was the other soundbite that he had to say here? Okay, so I think this was the soundbite. I got this through our friends at Fox News Radio. This is the soundbite where Ron DeSantis is asked if he is now actually running for president.
You could beat Biden?
I think so.
So you're running then?
No, I didn't say that. I just said I think I could. I mean, I think that's – I mean, if you look at Florida
– Who would be harder to beat, Biden or Donald Trump?
I don't know.
All right. Anyway, so that was the soundbite where he said, "Yeah, he could beat Joe Biden in 2024." Kind of funny moment yesterday on the show. If I was a little faster on my feet, I would have had this response ready to go. But we had a liberal caller in the 9 o'clock hour of the show from Poplar, and it was kind of interesting because I completely agree with him. He was complaining about the VA and what a mess the VA is, and I said, "Golly, if only we had a chairman of the Senate Veterans Affairs Committee that could clean up these messes in the VA." It's just kind of funny. You could tell that this guy is one of those, party line Democrats. And yet he was complaining about all the problems in the VA that are now gotten worse under Joe Biden and John Tester. But anyway, he had this funny line. He said, "Well, you guys are sitting there with your Trump underwear on." And I said, "Man, I don't even know where you would buy Trump underwear." And then, of course, John Jackson, typical John Jackson response. He said, "I'm actually wearing a Trump thong." But if I was thinking, if I was a little faster on my feet, kind of funny, true story, I actually have a DeSantis holster for my Glock 43X. So, John Jackson apparently has his Trump thong. Oh, bad visual. And I've got a DeSantis holster for my Glock. True story. Bought it at Shields. I've got another custom Kydex one from my buddy Deke as well. That's for the car.
Fox News. I'm Chris Foster. China's President Xi and Russia's President Putin say their goodbyes in Moscow, promising a new era not seen for 100 years, says Xi.
Friends and allies, these two leaders ended their summit with a pledge to work even more closely together. Despite promises of advanced military cooperation, no mention of Chinese weapon supplies to Russia, something feared by the West.
Fox's Jonathan Savage. Two new Republican presidential polls show Donald Trump increasing his lead over Florida Governor Ron DeSantis. DeSantis hasn't said he's running. Fox Nation's Piers Morgan asks, which Trump nickname does he prefer, Ron DeSanctimonious or Meatball Ron?
I don't know how to spell DeSanctimonious. I don't really know what it means, but I kind of like it's long. It's got a lot of vowels. I mean, so we go with that. That's fine. You know, you can call me whatever you want. I mean, just as long as you also call me a winner.
America's listening to Fox News.
I hadn't even heard Meatball Ron yet. Did you guys hear that? I didn't even know that there was another nickname that Trump was using for the very successful Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, Meatball Ron. Hadn't even heard that one. All right. Well, we'll get into the potential Trump indictment news later this morning here as well. I've got a lot of great audio lined up for you. Texas Senator Ted Cruz weighed in on Hannity's program last night. I've got reaction from James Comer, from Jim Jordan, and much more. But first, coming up here in just a couple of minutes, we're going to chat with Jonathan Savage from Fox News Radio. He's going to wrap up the big summit between Communist Chinese leader Xi Jinping and Vladimir Putin in Moscow, and what came out of that, and a little bit of the reactions from the United States as well. Here's a report that Peter Ducey filed late last night.
As President Biden hosts entertainers in Washington, Putin and Xi meet in Russia. In a joint statement, officials from China and Russia write, the two sides believe that the purposes and principles of the United Nations Charter must be observed and international law must be respected. Speaker McCarthy says what's happening with Xi and Putin is historically dangerous. Some Republicans say the U.S. should slow its support of Ukraine. If China gives Russia lethal weapons, things may change, as China's Xi himself may have changed.
All right, yeah, so we're going to have more on those meetings here in just a few minutes with Jonathan Savage from Fox News Radio. I believe he's based in the U.K., so covers this, especially a lot of the news out of Europe and foreign policy, international news, etc. I think this cartoon by Branko sums this thing up perfectly, sums up the whole news story altogether, shows the weakness of Joe Biden's foreign policy and everything that Joe Biden is, the nonsense that Joe Biden and the Democrats are focused on here in America. The cartoon shows Putin and Xi Jinping with their arms around each other and the military pact in their hands. And then it has a line from Xi Jinping where he says, hey, don't worry, he's pretty busy right now. And then on the flip side is Joe Biden juggling these bowling pins, and on the bowling pins are the words equity, diversity, inclusion, climate change, basically all the woke BS or the climate change garbage that's undermining the American economy, the woke BS that's undermining our military and our national security, and so much of this great country that's being undermined by the nonsense being pulled by Biden, Tester, and the rest of the Democrats right now. And so the cartoon just makes the point that, wow, here you've got Xi Jinping and Vladimir Putin, and they're building more alliances all over the world. Well, Joe Biden's juggling all this goofball stuff here in America, weakening this country, dividing this country, weakening our military, weakening our own national security. Our southern border is completely wide open. There's an invasion on our own southern border. In fact, there's a Fox News report about Chinese nationals who are being led into the country.
Montana is talking here. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Yeah, Russian and Chinese leaders met for 2 days at a Moscow summit. That's what we're going to be talking about with Fox News Radio's Jonathan Savage here in just a second. And I just got a couple of headlines here. A New York Times alert went out. Xi Jinping's Moscow trip was cast as a mission for peace in Ukraine, but his priority was bolstering Russia as a partner in countering the U.S. I think that's a good quick little synopsis based off of everything that we've heard. Wall Street Journal, meanwhile, has this headline, Russia-China Summit Showcases Challenge to the West. Xi Jinping and Vladimir Putin play up their solidarity and deepen economic and political ties. I still think, though, that one of the biggest headlines, it might seem like a sidebar, but to me that's even more interesting, is this news about Saudi Arabia and Iran now coming together at the table, and how it all benefits Iran and it all benefits China. Because what that tells me is it's not just that the Biden administration's weakness has forced a stronger Russia-China alliance here, where China is basically saying, oh yeah, we'll keep playing this thing out here. It's the fact that this weak foreign policy of the Biden administration is pushing other countries right into the arms of the communist Chinese. Anyway, that's my take. Let's get into the news, though. We've got Jonathan Savage with Fox News Radio now with us. Jonathan, great to have you on the show this morning. And, how would you sum up the past 2 days of meetings?
Yeah, great to talk to you, Aaron. Well, they say the pictures are better on the radio, don't they? But it's hard to do justice to the images we've seen coming out of the Kremlin. A sweeping musical score, these grand opulent surroundings, this big red carpet, and two leaders being treated with almost religious deference. And I would sum up by saying it sends a clear message to the world. Russia and China are close friends, strong allies, and international partners.
We know that China has been helping Russia with their invasion of Ukraine. The question is, how much more help will they provide, and how especially when it comes to lethal aid?
This was the key question, I think, this week, certainly one of them, because the United States government, the Pentagon, has gone public with its worries that China was considering supplying arms and ammunition to Russia. China has always denied doing this, and there were no words regarding this coming out of this meeting at the Kremlin. China did, though, say again that it was impartial as related to the war in Ukraine, and said that it was all about peace and cooperation and conversation. But the world is looking at the way China has behaved, how it has failed to condemn Russia, how it's failed to use its influence to get Russia to pull troops out, and has been buying oil for Russia, so sending Chinese money into Russia, and saying, are you really impartial?
Are the Europeans seeing through this PR game by Xi Jinping? Are they seeing through it, or are they going to, you know, now step up in response, or are they kind of going, what's the reaction like across Europe?
I think the European perspective on China is very similar to the United States perspective on China. Certainly within those countries that are members of the European Union or members of NATO, they are as concerned as anyone. Now, there isn't quite the same diplomatic rancor between European countries and China as you get with the United States and China. The EU and China are still big trading partners, but there are still concerns about what China is going to do, especially because Europe wants this war to be over. They want Russia to withdraw, and anyone with any influence in Vladimir Putin, they would hope they would use that influence to end the war.
Yeah, I mean, my just kind of thinking, just looking at this from afar, from over here, is, you know, look, if you're Xi Jinping, you'd love to just see this keep playing out. You'd love to see Russia keep throwing resources and troops into Ukraine. You'd love to see the United States and folks in Europe just continue pouring resources into this war. And then China can sit back and just run the rest of the table and pick up all the rest of the chips all over the world.
Aaron, did you ever watch Game of Thrones?
A little bit of it, not fully. I've watched bits and pieces of it, yeah. But I'm sure a lot of our listeners did, though.
Yeah, there's one line which sticks out to me when I think about international relations in Game of Thrones. It's where one character says, chaos is a ladder. And China may well be looking at the chaos happening in Eastern Europe and thinking, this is a ladder to make ourselves more powerful, more influential, and a ladder for our economy to climb out of the morass of the COVID-19 pandemic and the damaging restrictions that China inflicted upon its people and upon its businesses. So, you know, you may be right that China can benefit from this war, but at the same time, you could also say that China wants a peaceful world because strong economies can often come from peace.
That's a fascinating insight that you gave right there with that Game of Thrones analogy. I got to save that audio because that is great insight. And we've seen everything. You know, we had the China spy balloon right over our heads here in Billings, Montana, what, just a month or two ago that got a lot of international news. In fact, I was even chatting with the BBC about that one.
Right, yeah. China is... It's obviously looking west and east. It has concerns about the United States military operations around its borders. It feels somewhat encircled by the United States and its NATO allies. So there are a lot of points of possible conflict and confrontation in the coming months.
Well, what you said, too, about chaos being a ladder and who has benefited, and it reminds me of the Latin phrase, cui bono, who benefits. And we have seen China benefit in many ways since that little virus came out of Wuhan, China. Jonathan Savage, Fox News Radio, always a pleasure. Anything else we missed?
I think that's all for now. I think we covered it.
All right. Well, gratefully appreciate your time this morning. Thanks for being with us.
Take care.
You too. That was great insight. Wow. With that, I don't know if John Jackson's listening, and he's probably already up and rolling listening this morning, but I think John Jackson, when he's joined us on a Tuesday here and there, I think he actually used a Game of Thrones analogy once or twice here on the show. So I'll have to, man, if he didn't hear what Jonathan Savage just said, we'll have to send him the audio so he can react to that one. Or if I'm smart enough, I'll save it for next Tuesday when he joins us too, and we'll re-rack that portion of the conversation. What's your take? 406-294-0970. Let's see, one of our liberal friends on Twitter, we were kind of having this conversation earlier this morning. I shared this audio clip. This was from Laura Ingraham's program last night. Who was she interviewing? Oh, Elbridge Colby. I'd never heard of Elbridge Colby before. Apparently, he's got a book out right now. I'll get the name of the book for you here in just a second. But he was talking about this Russia-China alliance on Laura Ingraham's program last night. And I thought he summed it up very well.
After a five-hour meeting with Xi and Putin, and now Putin is traveling to see Xi. I mean, this is a long-distance relationship, but it's gotten very close. This is not an alliance?
Well, in some ways, Laura, it may actually be better than some of our own alliances where our allies actually don't pull their weight, to be totally frank. I mean, this, by any historical standard, this is absolutely an alliance. And I mean, I don't know what it means to dismiss it as a marriage of convenience. I mean, the Chinese are propping up the Russian economy. They associated themselves with the Russian position on the Ukraine conflict. We see the Russians moving towards yuanization, more reliance on the yuan. So I think this is a very deep and abiding alliance. And to your point, there's a very close personal relationship that's very evident between Xi Jinping and Vladimir Putin. If you look at the body language, it's very clear. And if you look at the fact that this is Xi Jinping's first foreign visit since COVID, and he goes someplace for 3 days, and then he invites Vladimir Putin to come visit him. I mean, we are definitely dealing with probably the closest Sino-Russian relationship, certainly back to probably the 1950s and maybe even beyond that.
And the balance of power geopolitically does what? When our economy continues to go down the tubes under Biden, and these two are teaming up.
Well, it's a massive danger, and I think it's a real indictment of American statecraft. I mean, we're marking about the 20th anniversary of the Iraq War, and this is the kind of the result of the foreign policy that the Iraq War sort of represented and what it's produced, which is almost like a truism of what you want to avoid in American foreign policy is China and Russia coming together. If you go back to Kissinger, et cetera, we always sought to have to divide them apart. These are the two massive Eurasian land powers. China's now an economy of roughly our own size. Russia's a very dangerous dangerous country. And, you know, now they're basically in the position in which, you know, the Chinese are clearly preparing to use military action. We don't know what they're going to do, but they're talking openly about it. And at the same time, Putin is able to distract us. So I think actually, you know, people are saying, including a lot of Republicans are saying, hey, we have to defeat Russia in order to focus eventually on China. I think that's a delusion, Laura. The reality is at this point, the Chinese are helping to prop up the Russians to distract the Americans in Europe, and that's actually playing into their strategy. And, you know, one of two things happens for the Chinese, I think, in this sort of approach. One is either the Americans continue to get bogged down in Europe and sort of play along, as you've seen from Kirby and others. The other is that there's a settlement that basically the Chinese are the critical, you know, pathway, the critical broker, and then they've driven a wedge between us and the Europeans.
All right. Anyway, fascinating insight. I'll tell you more about him after this.
Now, here's the morning Sean Hannity update.
I went back, I did a deep dive, took a look into the background and record of this guy, Alvin Bragg. Since he took office, he's downgraded 52% of all felony cases brought before him to misdemeanors. When his office does end up bringing felony charges, they only secure convictions in 51% of cases. He gave plea deals to two criminals involved in the fatal stabbing of a U.S. Army vet, father of three. One of the attackers received a slap on the wrist, prison sentence. This is murder of 7 years after taking the deal with Bragg's office that included pleading guilty to a lesser gang assault charge. Another attacker also took a deal with Bragg's office, pled guilty to assault and only received time served for the years that she spent in jail. While the case went through the courts, no additional jail time.
Join Sean later today right here on the Sean Hannity Show.
You know, a cyber thief could steal the equity in your home without you even knowing. Now, it's a financially devastating scam. It's called home title theft. Now, cyber thieves hunt for the title of your home online. Then they'll forge your signature on a transfer document stating that you sold them your home when you didn't. Then they'll take out loans on your home with your equity, or they'll sell it to an unsuspecting buyer. And by the way, they're gone. Your money's gone also. Your home is not in your name anymore. And now you're hiring attorneys to try and save your home. I protect my home, my equity, with Home Title Lock. You should too. Home Title Lock, they put a virtual shield around your home's title. Now that's the instant they detect activity or tampering around your home's title. They help shut it down and shut it down fast. First things first. Get a free title scan with sign up to verify your home is safely in.
Before this offer expires April 9th, limited time offer for new clients filing at participating locations. Max value $200. Visit JacksonHewitt.com/50 for terms.
Yeah, I know. Sean is the host, but the real star is Linda, the producer.
Gear Bash 2023.
Broadcasting from the Grizzly Gold and Silver Studios, trusted by the Northwest, Montana-owned. Online at grizzlygoldandsilver.com.
Serving the great state of Montana. From the peaks of the Beartooth to the banks of the Clark Fork River. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, let's see. Oh, let me tell you real quickly about the author. I played that great audio from Laura Ingraham's program last night, and I just pulled up the book. Okay, here we go. The book is called The Strategy of Denial, American Defense in an Age of Great Power Conflict. That was Elbridge Colby, who we heard just before the last Hannity update break. But anyway, apparently he was the author of the lead architect of the 2018 National Defense Strategy. Back when we were rock and rolling on the international stage and from a foreign policy standpoint, as you might recall. All right, let's get to the legislative update here from Jeff Laszloffy with the Montana Family Foundation. I think he's got some good news for us here today.
As we enter the final quarter of the 2023 legislative session, the victories keep piling up, but now is not the time to let down our guard. It's time to keep up the pressure, lean into the tape, and finish well. As we've said before, we're currently working on roughly 40 bills, and job one is always to kill the bad bills. For the most part, that's done. And our focus is now on passing the good ones. On that note, we've got some good news. Yesterday, we talked about Senate Bill 99, a bill to ban irreversible gender reassignment procedures on minors. We were fairly confident the bill would pass out of the House Judiciary Committee, and it did on a party line vote. Now, it's onto the House floor for the final two votes. This could take place as early as tomorrow, so now is the time to call. Some may ask why we always focus on Republicans, and the answer is easy. That's where the low-hanging fruit is. It may sound harsh, but our job is to pass and kill bills, and for us, it's simple math. The question is always the same. What is the most direct path to a majority of votes? And the answer is always through the Republican legislators for two reasons. First, as a party, they are predisposed to voting yes on our bills. Whether it's abortion, marriage and family, religious freedom, or school choice, most of our issues are supported by the Republican Party platform. On the flip side, most of the issues that we support are specifically opposed in the Democrat Party platform. That's point one. Second point is that Republicans have the numbers. Unlike the Democrats, who generally vote as a solid block, the Republican caucus in the House and Senate are much more diverse. They're made up of solid conservatives, moderate conservatives, and some, frankly, who would feel much more at home in the Democrat Party. Those folks run as Republicans because they could never be elected as Democrats in those districts. The Republican caucus also has many members who are more libertarian in nature. These can be wild cards. We get them on some bills and not on others. That said, Republicans hold both houses by supermajorities, so we don't need every Republican to pass a bill. For that reason, we tend to focus on the votes that we can get and write off the votes of liberal Republicans or Democrats, which would require much more effort and whose votes, in the end, we would fail to get anyway. In short, targeting the votes we can get allows us to more effectively manage our time and resources. Senate Bill 99 failed in the final House vote last session by two votes, and we're determined that that will not happen again this year. So far, the bill has had strong support and passed the Senate 30-20, losing only two Republican votes. What's amazing is to see how the issue has moved to the front burner in the past 2 years. Currently, half of the states have similar legislation pending, and the quality of the testimony here in Montana is much better than it was 2 years ago. Most notably is the number of detransitioners who went back to living a normal life after having lived as a different gender for years. Many of them can never be made physically whole, but they are living their lives as best they can, and they're adamant that minors should not be allowed to make the same mistake. That said, please visit our website at montanafamily.org, then call the Republican members of the House and ask them to vote yes on Senate Bill 99. For the Montana Family Foundation, this is Jeff Laszlofy reminding you that this government is your government and your input does make a difference.
Contact the Montana Family Foundation at 406-628-1141 or on the web at montanafamily.org.
All right, and if you go to our Montana Talks website right now, if you want the phone number to call and the list of representatives that they're encouraging you to call, we've got it all right there, including the video of that young Montana man who detransitioned after identifying as a transgender woman. Interesting stuff. Check out the story, montanatalks.com. Back after this.